Hopefully that anyone else comes on can join in when we go, so.
Okay.
And Kristen has some questions, she says. So
all right, good for her.
She was the first on, so we're going to give her first go.
Awesome. Woo!
Hey.
Hey. So I just kind of want to piggyback. As of last week, we actually met as a bench for the very first time.
Yay.
Yay. And actually saw our scroll together, and that was pretty awesome. But a couple other things of, I guess, that I have questions about to you, Mike, is that one of the people who are on our bench had an encounter with two lions.
Mm.
And so I asked God, well, what's that about? And it's interesting is that in Jewish history, and I don't know if I can't find more than that, that the two lions are seen on their mantles that guard the Torah scroll.
Yep.
And I thought that was really a cool way for God to say, hey, here's your protectors for what you're doing. So it was awesome. Really awesome.
Yeah.
Really awesome. I didn't know if you had any, because I sense that they're spiritual beings and we'll have an opportunity to engage them. I didn't know if you had any experience with that, Mike. And I also, my other question is, can you give me some for instances, because heaven seems to be getting so much closer during our worship services that it almost, because I do lead worship and it distracts me. I mean, it's so obvious them walking through the wall that people are seeing me going, uh-oh, somebody just came in, because they're catching my response. And I would just love I basically honor them and say you're welcome, but I'd love some practical ways that you have explored that in a corporate setting.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, that's good. First, in terms of lions, there are many, many spiritual beings that are in the shape of lions. It's not all the lion of the tribe of Judah. It's not all, in the sense of the four faces of God, that type of lion. There are many ways in which lion can appear. We had several times in our worship things when there'll be lions prowling around and people were like, woohoo. And those who could see them were sort of, a bit freaked out. And so I did do some, okay, who are you, what are you here for? And most of our engagement recently with the lion has been very much more about the four faces of God and engaging God's, the manifestation of God's presence in that kingly function. But the lions that engaged had several different functions. I mean, some of them were roaring. I mean, literally they were roaring lions and people were sort of like, whoa, are they going to come and eat me up? Because people just didn't know. I mean, this we're talking about a few years ago when we first started to engage this stuff. So they were like, what is this? What am I seeing? What's going on? And actually, some were not roaring. They were very much they engaged people's eyes. It was the eyes that caught people when they were looking. And so again, they are for us. They had specific assignments that they were sent for, and some of those were assignments. When lions roar, they don't roar into the air. They roar into the ground. Because the ground carries the frequency of the roar a whole load further to designate their territories. So there's a function where they are there in terms of protection, but they're also there in terms of a designated territory in which they claim the ground. And so there's many different ways in which they engage. I mean, for you, I mean, in terms of engaging the scroll, I mean, absolutely, there's a sense of, yes, they're here to guard and protect your scroll. I mean, have you? Some of it is, our church angel has two faces. One's a lion and one's an eagle. And he's a large angel. I mean, he's a fairly sort of warrior-like large angel, maybe 80, 90 feet high. So most people only actually see his ankles, you know. So they're just sort of, what am I looking at, you know? But when you learn to see spatially, you can actually see and contain that and bring it down into something that you can engage the whole thing. Even though he appears that size, for me now, I can see and then see the whole thing, because I've just learned to engage that spatial dimension in a different way. But I had to train myself to do that. So yeah, I think lions will have many functions, but they often are kingly. They are about government. They are associated with scrolls of government and attached to that, particularly for territory. In terms of worship, funnily enough, this Sunday I am going to do a whole session on the angelic engagement in our worship services. So I'm going to actually describe what's going on, where the different angels are, what they're doing, how they engage with each other. Because we have someone who's very gifted with flags and banners, and she has made particular flags out of particular colors as God has instructed her with the four faces of God. So we have four flags, one with each face of the God with particular colors. We have one flag that has all four faces on it. We have other flags that represent the four angels that are associated particularly with my ministry, and they are engaging church-wise every time we gather, and that's transformation, refiner's fire, sands of many waters, and winds of change. So they come every time we gather. But what I've discovered is, and this is where I relate to what you're saying, there seems to be a huge overlap between heaven and earth, and they're just like, sometimes I don't know what I'm looking at. You know, it's almost like I'm seeing both at the same time. So I'm seeing the four faces of God, and they're represented by, you know, the lion, ox, eagle, and the man, and that is the heavenly engagement around the ark. So we get to step in there and engage, and worship leaders often step into that place and others step in there. But as we do that, there's a superimposedness that they're in heaven, but they're actually connected to earth. And then we have the four angels who are very much assigned to us. And so they're in this dimension. They're not in heaven. They're in this dimension. It's a spiritual dimension, but it's here, which is different. And I found that I was looking at this, and I was looking at, actually, there was an arc forming between the two. So where the lion was engaged with winds of change, they formed an arc of agreement that actually was a tangible sense, that you could go and stand where the flags were, because often we lay the flags out on our sort of floor, because we don't tend to have chairs in rows, we just have a big semicircle, and so we have a big area that people can engage in, and so they get laid out. And so I was looking at this, so I was seeing the lion flag was on the floor, and I was looking at the lion, and then I could see the winds of change angel, and they often herald, so they've got trumpets that herald a sound and release a sound, and Then I started to look at all of them, and I could see each of them were forming an arc. So there was this connection between heaven and earth, between the face of God and this particular angel in each of the corners, because they were laid out on north, south, east, and west. So east was the lion, and south the ox, and whatever the other one is for that, west the eagle, and then north the man. And then on the corners of that four faces were these angels. So, you know, I suddenly started to see their connection. And that, I began to investigate. So I went and stood in the places. Well, the first one I stood in was the eagle and the sound of many waters, and I was just gone. It was just like I was taken so much deeper than I'd ever been before into this familiar place. It was a familiar place, but I'd never been far. I'd always stopped at this place, never thinking there was anything deeper. So I went deeper into this experience, which was really, it took me right back into something. It was difficult to describe, but it opened up a portal, and that's what I found. There was an earthly sense where if you engage this in the presence there, there was a manifestation of the eagle, which is the apostolic, so that there was the bigger picture that you could see things. And then there was the sound of many waters, which was really about destiny. So people were standing there and they just began to see something of the bigger picture of their destiny while they were standing there. But actually there was a portal that opened that went deeper and went higher. So I ended up in this deep, deep place, completely gone from what was going on around me. And then as I engaged that, it took me higher. And I went into a realm that I'd never been before. It was so hard to describe. Everything was together, but everything was also separate. But it just was like it was really difficult. Just the colors and the fragrances and everything. And you know, it was in a realm within perfection somewhere, but it was a really key encounter. I stood, you know, this week I went and stood on the lion and the winds of change, and again I just encountered this whole thing of a new season and the rule of God in me that needed to take place for this new season that was coming. So I got stretched. It's like they pulled me. It was really uncomfortable. It's like I was like a cross standing here. I was just like, my arms were just pulled up, my legs were pulled out, and I was just being stretched for the new season. And they said, well, actually, I'm here to give you greater capacity, but it's going to be a stretch. So you've got to be flexible and you've got to be malleable. So I'm like, oh, flipping it. I know what that's like. I've been there before. You know, so those are some of the things. So each of those connections had a function here, but also a portal open for that connection with heaven. And you know, about 12 months ago, I began to see the four faces of God really clearly, and I just felt moved to go and stand in the corners of the room. And as I stood there, I began to see one of the living creatures that came. So normally the four faces are representations of that aspect of God in terms of king, prophetic, apostolic, and priestly function. But the living creatures are actually creatures. You know, they are actual creatures. And so they showed up a couple of times, which was a really, like, you know, in my face showed up. Like, sort of like, really in my face, and I was sort of like, woo. So we've really learned to engage with them, and it's helpful when someone sort of is in tune with that, you know. And so I sort of function not cognitively with the person in the flags, but we are seemingly seeing the same things, or I'm seeing something, and then she lays the flags out according to what I'm seeing. You know, one day I saw mantles being given out, and I was just about to, you know, because one of the angels sort of put down the trumpet and had all these mantles to give out, and I'm like just about to say this, and she's giving mantles out, putting flags over people. You know, so you get this sort of interaction and connection between those realms and what's going on here. Now, I'm not saying everybody necessarily can just tune into it straight away, but we're teaching people. That's why I'm going to share it on Sunday, to try and explain that these are some of the things that happen in these areas because of this connection between heaven and earth and an agreement that's taking place that forms something manifested. You know, and so each of these things have a manifestation which people can engage in. I mean, but some people just do. I mean, we've got a guy who's come out of is in a rehab situation, you know, has no real Christian background, but sort of almost God got him in prison, and he started reading the Bible in prison, and when he came out, we managed to get hold of him, and he's in our sort of rehab, got radically saved, baptized in the Spirit. He was standing in worship a couple weeks ago, and he just felt nudged to step to the left, He just felt a nudge. That's all he could describe it as, to move to the left. So he moved to the left, and immediately he moved to the left, it was like he described it as he was looking out of the eye of an eagle flying. And so he had this encounter where he was looking at the eye of evil, all this stuff going on. So when he eventually sort of came around, opening his eyes to engage, he was stood on the eagle flag. But he didn't know he was standing on the eagle flag. And he's got no spiritual background of understanding what eagles are or anything. It's just like he's just opened, he's come into this environment, engaged, and you know, that had that sort of encounter. So it's, you know, people are, it's a tangible thing that seems to be something that there's an overlapping of heaven and earth where we can engage there and here. And sometimes things are manifested here as a result of that, and sometimes we get to go there as a result of it, and people are doing different things. And we've also had the same type of thing with the seven spirits of God. So we have flags for each spirit. Sometimes they get laid out around that's going on, around the four faces. Sometimes actually they're laid out as a pathway, and people are encouraged to if they're drawn to a particular color, then just to go and kneel on it or stand on it or look into it and just see what happens. You know, and sometimes, you know, one thing I saw a few months ago, I saw the transformation angel put down the trumpet and pick up an axe, really big axe. So I'm like, okay, what's going on? So I'm communicating, asking, what are you doing? So immediately I see and look around the room, and I see everyone's got chains on them. Some of them really, really long chains, but actually change. And those chains, it's almost like some people were getting to a point where they were just about to go further, and they were yanked back because they came to the end of the length of the chain. And most people were unaware because they'd never got to that point. But I saw that, and I saw this angel with this big axe wanting to break these chains. So in just as I'm about to go and share this and just say, okay, look, this is what I'm seeing right now, I think this angel wants to minister, the lady with the flags, Joe, she basically had laid out all the seven spirits of God flags, and she said, right, what I've seen is this is going to be a walkway that as you engage, you're then going to engage this angel, and there's promises for you that are going to be released once you engage this angel, which is where the axe was. So it's like, you know, we're having a lot of that type of engagement. And it's really great. I mean, you know, I mean, I see it all the time. Fortunately, I mean, I've learned when I'm speaking and doing things like that, I just switch it off. I mean, I turn it off so I'm not looking at that stuff. You know, but then I turn it on. It's like we did a whole engagement this week with seeing our spirit and the first love gate open and expand, and the sort of vibrating frequency have come around through our gateways. And that was really cool. I then started to look and see all the colors and fragrances and things that were coming off people as they looked to engage and release that around them into the room. So that was really good, because then I chose to look and see. I could see all the colors and the different things that were going on, which was really great. So only once have I had, when I was speaking, a whole bunch of Kashmirian angels decided to come and walk right in front of my screen, my laptop, and stand in front of me. I couldn't see the screen. Literally, I mean, it was just my eyes were open. It was a completely, I saw them out of the corner of my eye, and I was sort of like, but I just carried on. What are they doing? And then they started moving, and they just moved right in front. And at that point in time, I was sort of like, I still carried on, but I was like somewhat distracted. It was like, okay. And it was just like, but so eventually they sort of moved off. And it was like, later I just said to God, well, what was all that about? You know, it's really distracting. He said, well, you wanted to see in this realm, you have to be able to deal with what you see and handle what you see. So I'm like, well, okay, that's great, but please don't do it again like that, because it's really... but sometimes I do look out and I observe and sort of look to see what's going on. Oftentimes at the beginning of the meeting, you know, I always speak first, so then we can engage afterwards and then go into worship and sort of so it carries on afterwards. And I sometimes, while a band are just sort of tuning up and practicing, or they may just be playing a soundcheck song, I'm just sort of sitting there and I'm just looking and seeing, you know, what's going on. And sometimes I can see some of the angels, and you know, this week I could see something that was in operation that then I was able to deal with while I was just sat there. Yeah, because we had several new people that came, and you know, they carried fear with them. You know, so I sort of needed to deal with that fear before we then got any further, which I was able to do because I was looking and seeing what they were carrying, because they were new people that I hadn't seen before. But they were people who were in the rehab, so they were new people in the rehab who hadn't been. So it usually freaks them out the first few times they come. Yeah, but they tend to engage God quick and get saved. So, you know, it's good. So I don't know if that helps, but it's some of where that is at the minute. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
You guys have a rehab right there in your...
Yeah, we actually earth this stuff out. So in a sense, we have a day center in which we feed people and shower people and clothe people, and we have a whole team that operate that. We also have a community, therapeutic community, which is, you know, helps people in rehab, and so we do a lot of community work where we're engaging with the community in certain things. So that's always good fun, and it's great to see people's lives changed. You know, and some people come in, like, you know, we've had a couple of guys recently have been from a Catholic background, and so they've been really quite anti-religious stuff. You know, it's just like it wasn't a good experience for them, and so they were quite anti. But when they start encountering God's presence and they feel the love of God there and they feel all the atmosphere, it certainly soon changes them. And we send a guy out, one of our bench of seven goes out to the rehab every Tuesday night and engages with them, ministers to them, prays for them, you know, just so they have a sort of an ongoing connection and outworking of that with them, which is great. So, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Anyone else got anything? Okay. Go on then.
Yeah, I do. I was talking with Josh a little bit on Sunday, and then talking with my wife. And I just wanted to know, because, again, you know, the perspective that you get that is, I think, more of a reality of the Word than what most have received.
Yeah.
I'm really getting an impression in my spirit, and actually God's been leading me by the Spirit, Holy Spirit, for quite some time in this area. But it's in the area of relationships, and it's that... there seems to be almost like a standard that the body of Christ has lived by, that when there's a broken relationship, whether it's an offense or whether it's you know, someone leaving a church or something like, it seems to be like a disconnect that takes place, almost in a way, almost like a you know, almost like excluding them from their life. You know, they may see someone at a store or something like that, and they'll be cordial, but they don't let them in their heart anymore. Mm-hmm. And I've really been impressed with, especially the last 2 years, to make all these relationships right. Mm-hmm. It's like the Lord's telling me that this is very important. You do not realize the depth of this. And in talking to Josh, I said, Josh, I'm getting the impression that if I don't take care of these now, I'm going to be responsible for them when I get to heaven, that it's not going to just be all perfect. And so I said, I think that the idea that we think that when heaven is going to come, it's going to somehow make us all okay, that we tend to, like, live this life of almost like putting it off because we're just going to let God do the work, and I'm just not sensing that anymore.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think if you think about it in terms of Jesus' teaching on what we do here prepares us for there, so the talents and the rewards for using the talents or the abilities or the destiny we've been given by God and outworking it is we get to do cool stuff in the age to come. So we get to rule. I mean, he uses obviously illustrations that they could understand. So, okay, yeah, you can rule over 10 cities and you'll rule over 5 cities, because that was obviously language that helped them understand that there was a governmental perspective of where they were given positions in the age to come, but as a result of what they did in this age. And of course, the one who buried his talent and sort of saw God in the wrong way, as this harsh taskmaster who was going to punish and judge and this sort of stuff, he obviously wasted his talent, and his talent was given to somebody else. And so my perspective on it, and I've seen this in operation somewhat, when the last day comes, then we all will have to, in a sense, face God and give an account for whether our scroll of destiny matches our scroll of our life, and you know, and how that matches up. And so I believe that what happens is that last day deals with all that stuff, and there it says that, you know, all the tears get wiped away and all that stuff gets dealt with, so we don't take those regrets on into eternity, because they're time things. They happened in time, and sin operates in time, not in eternity. And so what happens is that then we go into the age to come and we fulfill the roles that we have been rewarded with by being faithful to our destiny in this time and dimension. But that may be very different from what God has designed. And so it's really important that we make sure that we outwork and fulfill the mandates that we're given in this time, because it will have an effect on what we do. And it's like, you know, the 5 wise virgins and the 5 foolish virgins. You know, there was a sense where they were separated in an outer place where rather than an inner place. And you get Jesus talking about this in parables, like, okay, there's a wedding feast and there's some that are right up close and there's some that are right at the back. And it's actually some who thought they would be up close weren't. And some of those are because they're doing things like, oh, I cast out demons in your name, I prophesied in your name, I did this and I did that. And he said, well, I depart from me, I don't know you. He wasn't saying, I don't know who you are. He was saying, I don't recognize what you've done as what's on your destiny scroll. So actually, you don't get to sit here because you're going to be back there. So there's lots of indications within the word which sort of indicate that there are rewards and that it really does matter how we fulfill our destiny here, because that will indicate what we're going to be doing there. Now, I don't believe that we'll go in through eternity carrying like, oh no, I wish I'd done that. But we will have to face the regret. I mean, I've stood before the judgment seat already several times, and I know what it feels like to look at regret. I know how emotionally I responded to it. I also know what happened when that got burnt up and consumed by fire, and you know, the eyes of God looked at me, and I know how I felt afterwards. So I know there was no condemnation, guilt, or shame associated to it, but when I realized where I'd done things out of the wrong motive for my own needs, or I'd missed opportunities that God had given me, and those would be, you know, the wood, hay, and stubble that are on our scroll rather than the gold, silver, and precious stones, I know that there is an emotional response when you realize. But God will wipe those tears away. And once they're wiped away on that last day, they don't go on into eternity. But the consequence of it does go on into eternity. We just don't feel the consequence in a sense. We just get to do stuff, but actually it's not everything we could have done, if that makes sense. So, you know, yes, when we're called to outwork forgiveness and forgiving everyone, making sure there's nothing between anybody, making sure that if we know someone's got something against us, we resolve those things. If we've got any against anyone, we actually resolve those things correctly. You know, and it says, you know, as far as we're able to live at peace with everybody. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, if people won't live at peace with us, we can't. It's not our responsibility what they do, but it is our responsibility what we do. And we should go if we know someone's got something against us, and we should go if we know we've got something against them. And that's something within the body and within general church life that just doesn't happen. For various reasons and excuses, well, I'll just do it between me and God, and it's all, well, I've forgiven them anyway. Well, then if you have, then there'll be no problem for having complete restoration in any relationship, no matter what's been done, if true forgiveness takes place. But a lot of people forgive with their mind, they don't release with their heart. And there's a huge difference in that. So I think, yeah, there's a massive area where we need to be really, really careful, because actually those things brought death and sickness to the body when people broke bread with each other, and they carried those things in their heart and their life because they did not judge correctly the body. In other words, the effect that they had and that other people had. And actually, going back to our rehab situation, we have a series of concepts that the therapeutic community work out. And one of them is called responsible concern. And when people come into the rehab from a prison situation or street situation or that type of thing, they don't grass anybody up. It's just, it's a no-no. You do not grass. But when you come into a therapeutic community, you have to actually encounter people for their behavior and the effects that that behavior would have on you and the community. So we have to teach them to get over the fact that they don't tell them on what's going on to actually encountering people for their behavior. And so there's this issue where they deal with things. It's not an option to leave things hidden, not dealt with. We teach them. And some of those concepts would be really good to actually do in the church setting. And we have another one, which is called the Jaharis window, which is the revealed self, the hidden self, the blind self. And there are four windows. Again, it's like, okay, what do I know that I'm not letting anyone else know? You know, what do I know that I'm willing to let other people know? And what do I don't know that I have to be willing for other people to tell me? Because the blind self often gets, or God will tell me, actually very much God uses people to tell me, because actually that brings a humility that I have to say, I have to humble myself and receive from others when they point out my blind self areas. And then when I respond correctly, of course, they come into what the, you know, bringing the whole thing together in one. So there should be no stuff that I know that other people don't know in reality, or the others that I'm in relationship, I'm not prepared to share with them. Because if I'm not prepared to share, then I'm hiding it because I'm afraid of what they might think, or how they would treat me if they knew. And that, of course, is fear of man, and that brings a snare and bondage. So there's a whole host, again, where we encourage people to be honest and open with one another, and to be vulnerable with one another, and to give each other permission to speak those blind self areas. And it's always difficult, because it's like, well, if I go and say, will I be rejected, and will they treat me differently? So, you know, a whole load of stuff in that. So we're working it. We're working those things into general church life and encouraging people to have a culture of honor. This is what we're talking about, a culture of honor that deals with the problem, not points finger at the person. Because if we can deal with the problem, then we bring the problem to the surface by asking questions to help people see, well, why is the problem there? And there is no punishment. I mean, and I know, you know, in Bethel, they, you know, there's the Culture of Honor book, and there's some good testimonies of various things. And one of them was actually a testimony of where they were called into another church situation where there was a worship leader who was doing amazing things and opening up heaven for them, but they discovered that he was having an affair with somebody. So their reaction immediately was, well, we need to put him out of the church and we need to remove him from this, that, and the other. But one of the, I think, leaders or elders asked for some wisdom to what to do. And of course, you know, it was like, well, you know, they wanted to expose the person before the church and get the person to come and repent publicly in front of the church and do all those things that which generally you would think that should be done. And of course they presented the whole thing differently. They met with the guy, they discovered and brought to the surface, because he was feeling so much shame and guilt, they brought to the surface, well, why did you do this? What are the issues? You know, in terms of have you repented? In terms of your wife, do you want restoration? Does she want restoration? They went through all this stuff, brought the stuff to the surface, and they genuinely repented, received forgiveness from each other, you know, engaged in relationship, dealt with the issues that were there, brought them to the surface, dealt with them. And of course, it was like, you know, this was all done, and it was like, oh, wonderful. And of course, then the elders met, and it's like, well, what do we do? And of course, they sort of saw things from a perspective, well, we still need to punish him. He still needs to be taken out, because, and it's like, okay, so he's doing all this stuff, opening up heaven, all this wonderful stuff's happening, while he was doing this stuff in the background and struggling through this, and now he's not doing that, and he's found restoration, now you want to remove him from his position of what he was doing. And it's just like, all these things, it's just like God's grace and how God treats us in his mercy is so much different from how we treat each other. And we have to get back to having a culture where we demonstrate the love of God. You know, it doesn't mean that we don't do anything. You know, it doesn't mean that we're not responding. But how we deal with it is we deal with it in a culture of honor. We help the person come into God's restoration and forgiveness and wholeness. And of course, that may be a process. But we tend to have a judgment punishment issue on things rather than a love and restoration issue. And we need to see things from God's perspective so that we can restore relationships. There isn't punishment. God does not punish anybody. Yes, I know if someone's unrepentant, there are some biblical principles that you have to follow. But actually, if they're repentant, why would you then punish them? You know, and actually, it's one of those things where it's a challenge, you know. So, yeah, definitely some things around all that, that it's very, very important that we bring reconciliation and restoration into every situation we possibly can. You know, and even when sort of people choose to leave, I mean, here, you know, we always want to release them and pray for them and bless them. You know, we had a guy who had been really operating in a political spirit, caused a whole load of trouble. But when, you know, God moved him on, because it's like we weren't going to put him out of the church. And it's like, you know, we knew we had a strategy from God. We were just going to continue with the truth. We weren't going to get into an argument over theology and doctrine that he wanted. We just continued to walk out the path we're walking. Literally, he just became silent because it wasn't working, and eventually he moved, and we were able to just pray for him and bless him, you know, and there was no sense where we weren't going to do that because of all the trouble he'd caused, because we dealt with it. We dealt with it in our own hearts, and therefore we were able to bless. Now then, when some people decided they didn't want to continue walking the path we were walking, again, we offered them the opportunity, but they didn't want to. You know, they didn't want to be released. They wanted to go with a bad attitude because because we were wrong. Rather than, hey, look, we have a difference of viewpoint. We're very happy for you to pursue walking the path you want to walk. We're going to continue walking that path. We just want to bless you to find the path that you can walk with integrity in your own heart. But and they didn't want to do that, which is an indication that their hearts weren't right in leaving the way they did, but you just have to release them, and you release them to God's blessing. You know, when we do things judicially in the court system of heaven, and there are issues where we try and deal with people, we don't bring judgment on people, and we don't try and get God to release judgment on people. We forgive them when we release them, and we release blessing on them. the judgment goes on the enemy, not on people. But, you know, there is a train of thought and quite a contentious area where people are trying to do court cases where they're trying to judge people and release judgment on people, which is not, it doesn't work. And they're not in the same court because God wouldn't allow it, you know. But, you know, so some of those things are quite challenging situations, but we have to go the extra mile to ensure that we do absolutely everything we can to live at peace with people and to make sure the relationships are given an opportunity of being restored and reconciled. And even when one side chooses not to be, we still bless them. And if we can't bless them, then we really haven't truly forgiven them and released them. You know, but so yeah, it's a lot of that. So I think you're sensing a lot of where things are coming. But you know, again, I'm sure you're looking to outwork that, which is great. Okay. So anyone else got anything?
Can't believe nobody else has a question. George usually does.
Okay.
I have a question for you, Mike. Yeah. Is there one of these times that we could, and I don't know if this is something that is considered a something you practice, but going into the courts.
Yeah.
I don't know, is it because we have to have a specific purpose for going in, or because I think that's one area that I've only had like one experience in, but it seems like it's a key to, you know, victory in people's lives, as you know, as a person that's, you know, someone that's been, you know, put over them or given a responsibility of stewardship of their life as a pastor. Yeah. That it's a key to helping release them into what they need to either move into or be broken out of, or
definitely. Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. I think we do quite a lot of court cases. We do them as a 12 when we deal with things. It helps in a sense. There's the personal aspect to it. So if you're looking to deal with a personal issue in your life or around your life, or you're looking to be set free from something, you know, you can go in to deal with that personal issue, and therefore you stand identifying with the issue, and then you look for the accusations that the enemy would bring that gives them legal rights to that, for that behavior, for whether it's a familiar spirit or something. So there's that whole area where, you know, we could all step in together for something personal, or if there's a specific instance that you might have something going on for somebody else or a situation church-wise, you know, we've learned to step in and see what the accusations are, what are the legal rights the enemy has. I mean, we did this a few weeks ago. There's a lady in the church who we hadn't seen for a week, and it was like someone contacted them, and it was like if we found out that she was in intensive care, and actually she was severely, severely ill, had necrotizing fasciitis. She'd had an operation, and that operation had become infected, and it was like eating her flesh. And she was, you know, on the verge of death. I mean, it was really serious. So we came together, and we went into heaven, all stepped into heaven together, went in the court, stood on our behalf, called for the accusers to come, and each heard the accusations that the enemy had over her life. We then stepped back out of heaven, shared with each other all the things we saw, and then depending on the situation, sometimes one person then goes back in with that. Well, this was a whole list of stuff, so it was like, you know, no one, it was like a lot, so we didn't write it out at that point, it was just too much. So each of us then stepped back in and stood in identification under the judgment of God, and then confessed, repented, did whatever they needed to do for the accusation that had been made. And once we'd all completed that, we then had a separation order, a mandate, for her to be separated from that sickness and from the enemy's access points to her life. Now, she was unconscious, in intensive care. She couldn't do that for herself. So we did it on her behalf. And as a result of that, then we then gave that mandate to our mountain of health, and they went in to minister to her the next day. And they were able to get access to intensive care. They basically just enforced the mandate that we were given, and they prayed for her, ministered to her, and actually she's now at home. We had the testimony on Sunday that actually she's now at home. She's out walking, where she was basically about to die. You know, and if we hadn't have stood in the gap and dealt with the court case, it highly likely she would have died. You know, so that was one case where we then, you know, we dealt with something specific. Where you have governmental authority, you have to exercise and administrate that authority. So, for instance, in our day center, we connect with a whole broad range of people, from homeless people, addicted people, people who are marriage breakups, you know, all sorts of different things, just people who are struggling, people in poverty, in any amount of different scenarios. Well, we had a situation where we heard that four or five people that we knew quite well had died within a 5 or 6 day period. Overdoses, different things. One had committed murder and murdered his mother. I mean, pretty serious stuff. I mean, and so we felt, hey, the enemy was doing something here. We have jurisdiction here. This is our area of influence to bring good news into this dynamic. So we came together, and it's like, okay, we need to deal with what is going on here. You know, what is the enemy, what access point has he got into our community, but also into our sphere of government, which is meaning that we're not able to stop this stuff happening. So again, we stepped in together, had, I think, basically four or five sides of A4 of stuff. I mean, it was like stuff that went back into our community, into slavery, into our community, all sorts of things. And we all had different aspects of it. Some of us the same, it was confirmation, some of it different. We actually administered that, again, stepped back in together, each doing our bit, identifying with our community, identifying with the things. There was a whole load of Christians who, people had become saved but had gone back into addiction, which had given the enemy access to remove our authority, because it was like a mockery and he was mocking. It's like, oh yeah, this doesn't work. And, you know, because often those people are very vocal when they first get saved, and then if they slip back, it can be a very public thing of, this is not good. So we had to deal with them, forgive them, release them, deal with their situations. And it was a long case. It was a lot of stuff we had to deal with. But as a result of that, then we were issued with the authority to then administer that. So, you know, we then began to make declarations. We then began to administer that verdict to stop this happening and take authority over it. Now, that doesn't mean that people can't choose if they want to, but it means that the enemy has not got the right that he was having to open that up, you know. And, you know, since we've done that, then that whole state of death has stopped. But we have to be on guard for those areas and to administrate these things. It's like, we have to rule. We can't let the enemy have access to rule. And we need to identify, if he is, why. And those who are on the mountains need to be sensitive to those things, and they will be looking into the atmosphere, looking into what's going on. You know, are there schemes of the enemy? Because it says, you know, do not be ignorant of the enemy's schemes. So we have to be aware if there are plans and schemes that the enemy is using, and he will always use some sort of legal rights or loopholes to be able to engage those schemes. And that's where we step in and we deal with those things. So there's lots of things like that, which I think, yeah, we could do that. I mean, I think, you know, it's You can do that individually, or maybe something we're looking to separate from in our own life, some repeating issue that, you know, familiars latch onto, and maybe a mindset or behavior pattern. But, you know, that it can be done also, in a wider sense, for some of those things. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, we have a family that is going through just tragedy after tragedy.
Yep.
I mean, crazy things. It probably wouldn't be something that we'd be able to record, or it'd have to be, but I would just appreciate, you know,
yep,
you helping to lead a session. That way I can, you know, get a little bit more of a pathway, a framework of this type of stuff.
Yeah, sure. And very much, it's really, when you step into that and convene the court, people will get revelation in different ways depending on how they engage. So it's okay, the judge, God is going to come as the judge, Jesus is coming, you know, as the advocate. We are standing in the dock, if you like, on behalf of somebody or myself, whatever it might be, and then I'm going to call for my accusers to come. Now, they can't lie before God, so they have to give the truth. So it's basically, you receive that in different ways. I mean, I just demand to hear what the accusations are, and then I get often words, very much in a lie bust. You may get a word, or you may get a picture, or you may get a circumstance that may be generational. It may be something that's going on. It could be, hey, there's this happening in this family that, you know, you wouldn't see normally, but you get the revelation, and people get it in different ways, and then you pull the revelation together to get a picture, and then that gives you some themes. Then, okay, we need to deal with this. How do we deal with it? Well, okay, we need to repent. We need to repent on their behalf, or we may need to release forgiveness because this is caused by someone in their generation. Therefore, we forgive and release them in that generation. So you do a very similar thing to what you do in a lie busting type environment in dealing with the specifics that are revealed. But the key in it, and this is where it differs from a lie bust, you get a mandate, a verdict at the end of the day. And it's that verdict that gives you the authority to act. And it may be in our own life, and it may be in someone else's situation, but then, you know, what happens if, I don't know, let's say, you know, in a natural sense, you can have a court order that restricts someone's access to you or coming within 100 yards of you, whatever. That doesn't actually stop that person coming within 100 yards of you. It just means if they do, they're in for trouble. And so often the enemy will test our resolve and whether we will enforce the jurisdiction that we have. And so often people go to the court, they get a mandate, they feel, yeah, I'm overcome this now. And then the enemy comes and gives them brings thoughts into their mind. That's where you have to use your authority to take captive the thought. And if a familiar thing, a familiar thought, or a familiar pattern starts to emerge, you then take it back into the court and you hand it over to the judge. I mean, it's like he is not happy when someone breaks his order. And he will release greater judgment on the enemy when they break his order. And so a couple of times doing that, and it's like, in my experience, it just, they do not want to come under the judgment of God any more than they have to. You remember when Jesus was dealing with Legion, they were like, oh, don't send us back there. So they pleaded for leniency in regard. So there are degrees of judgment that can be released against the enemy. And so when they break an order, they get more severe punishment from God. And so in that sense, we have to make sure that we follow the whole thing through. Don't necessarily expect everything to completely be free in the first instant, but if we take the authority that we've been given, take that mandate, and then use that mandate in our own life against the thoughts, take them captive. No, I do not need, I need to outwork it here. What I do in heaven needs to be outworked here, and you may get some specific strategies of things to do. You know, so for us, in this situation where someone was in hospital, we dealt with the rights the enemy had to have access into this person's life but they were still in hospital and they were still sick. Then, okay, what do we need to do? We need to release this mandate to those to go and actually then administer it to her in that way. And also, I went in the spirit into her room and laid hands on her. You know, immediately we received the authorization, I just went and did it. You know, I went into her room in my spirit and laid hands on the thing and rebuked it. You know, it's not there. And really interestingly, they now said to her when she left, you now need to heal from the inside out. I thought, well, okay, that's a really good prophetic statement of what's going to be happening to her as her spirit begins to minister to the rest of her body to bring her into health and wholeness. Not sure they meant it that way, but that's how we took it, and we were going to use that to see her recover from the inside out as her spirit begins to take authority in her soul and body. You know, so yeah, definitely we can do that. And it will be a good test case. So I'm sort of fairly familiar with doing it, but it's something that once you've done it a few times, you find it's not that difficult. But yeah, it does help to sort of just see the protocol and the different things when you first start. So which is good. So anyway, here we go. Excellent. Okay. Probably got time for one more question, a quick one, if anyone's got one. If not.
Going. Okay, I have a comment on that. Right. If you are doing it for, say, a family, say, 4 or 5 people, is the dynamic of involving them necessary, or are you able to just stand in the gap for them with these mandates, depending upon how God leads, I'm sure, and freedom can come?
It really depends on each situation. I mean, if they're unable to stand in the gap for themselves, then obviously if they're part of your church, you have authority to be able to stand on their behalf. The first court cases I ever did was on behalf of everybody. You know, I was in heaven one Sunday while I was fasting, actually, and the church was meeting, and I was looking down from heaven at what was going on, and all of a sudden I could suddenly see all these accusations on people. So it's like, you know, I mean, I was pretty green then, but it's like I was standing in the gap for each one of them and doing that. So you definitely can. Obviously, if there's a behavioral pattern or an access that something they're doing causes, then you do need to address that with them to help them to close that door themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, if there are generational things, if there are other things that you get shown, yeah, you can deal with all that. But there may be some things you need to actually say, look, we've been doing this on your behalf. This is the revelation we have. Can we help you in this area? Can we minister to you in this area? Can we help you deal with this? Because, for instance, if the enemy says, right, unforgiveness is the issue here in this situation, and this is what's given me a legal right to bring this sickness on this person, we can release forgiveness according to the word, because it says that in John, but ultimately, for that person to remain free, they have to forgive and release.
Personally,
because it's their issue. I mean, you can do something to prepare the way for that, but ultimately, they would not keep their healing. Even if we stood on their behalf and we've issued forgiveness on their behalf, ultimately, that would be a temporary measure if they did not repent and then forgive and release, because it's just an open door. You know, we may have stood in the door, in a sense, protecting that door at that point, but you can't do that. So ultimately, you do need to help people walk in the light and walk in the truth. So it very much it's determined by the individual circumstances. But you know, if someone was not a believer, then you know, you'd be looking for what strategy that God would give you to be able to help them. But in someone who's part of the church, well, depending on what you get shown, they may need to come into cooperation and agreement with it. You know, if they, for instance, if they'd made some covenant, you know, with stuff, or they had made vows that they'd forgotten about, you know, they would ultimately, you get the revelation, and you deal with it on their behalf, but actually it will be much more effective if they cooperate and then come into agreement with that themselves. And obviously in our own personal situations, it's different because it's us. So, you know, we are responsible, bottom line, for everything we see and do, and therefore we have to take responsibility for what we get shown. And ideally, you know, we have done this with people. You know, we have helped the person actually engage and see the accusations against them. It's the same as a lie bust. You're helping the person hear what the issues are. What are the lies that they're believing? And you could do it in a very lie busting format, if you like. Sometimes a court thing can be quite intimidating. Oh, a court? I don't know how to go to a court. But actually, you could say, okay, well, we're just going to ask God to tell you if there's anything that's a hindrance here. And do it that way. You know, then once you've got the revelation, then you can introduce, okay, we're going to get the, how do we then deal with this? And then you can then bring other aspects into it. So I think there's ways and means to help people get an understanding and to participate in it. And, I know lie busting has worked for us with people who aren't Christians at all. And you just help them to relax and just hear. And we found that that works, you know. So in this, it would definitely work in helping somebody to take responsibility for the situation they're in and help them through it. Sometimes it's really hard when they're not able, when they're in distraught and there's very difficult, and you know, so you can help, you know, the process. And sometimes you can say, okay, well, we're going to go together, and you may hear things for them, and you may help. Look, this is what I've seen. Do you resonate with that? Do you think that's something? Oh yeah, you know, and you'll find that you can work together to help someone through a situation like that. All right. Okay.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, you're welcome. All right. Well.